Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Attention all units. We've got our sights on a new episode of Andor. We're going to need some recon on this. Tango Squadron, on your six. Mission's all yours, Squadron Leader. To anyone else on this comm link, send all transmissions to andor@thelorehounds.com and get holocron bonus episodes for 10 credits with our season pass in the show notes. Rebels, may the Force be with you.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Andor podcast. I'm John from the Lorehounds, and we're your guides to a galaxy far, far away. This is going to be our coverage of episode one of Andor season two, titled One Year Later. With the weekly triple drops this season, we are doing coverage squadron style. That means I'll be handling the first episode every week, Alicia will be handling the second episode, and David the third, with each of us bringing in a co-pilot to help out. My co-pilot today, of course, is Marilyn Arbuckila, our favorite Tolkien scholar. Marilyn, welcome to the Rebellion.
Pedal to the metal, Commander. How are you doing? I realized that was a different galaxy reference. In fact, it was Galaxy Quest reference, but I figure enough people will know about it. I'd love to do that someday, by the way, just as an aside. But yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm delighted to be here. I'm delighted to start with Andor Season 2. It's I think it's going to be good. I hope it's going to be good.
I think we're in for a real treat now. I've not watched beyond episode one. I've only
Neither
watched episode one. Very good. So we're going to be doing this like it was a weekly release. You're just going to get three recaps each week from different people. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Definitely.
Can you tell us quickly what you thought about the episode?
Well, it's a great beginning to this series. Much better than the episode of season one, which made me think, I don't want to watch this. It was just so dark and so unlike Star Wars. But having seen all of season one and knowing what incredible work it is, I came in with a lot more faith. But this one, I really felt that they were hitting the Star Wars vibe this time because we have humor as well as tension.
Yeah.
I also think they did a great job bringing us back into the story. And they were giving us reminders of all the different plot lines. Although they did answer one plotline question without answering it. And I'll talk more about that when we get there. What about you, John?
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, you know, David has been overhyping the show for like weeks. It's almost made me resist getting hype for it because I'm like, he's got enough for everybody.
Seriously.
And then I turn it on and I'm like, okay, I get it. It's really good. I mean, the dialogue is incredible. I wrote down quotes. I'm like jotting down notes the entire time I'm watching because it's just so dense with rich dialogue and rich moments.
Yeah.
And like you said, Marilyn, they did a great job of bringing in humor that wasn't silly, right? It wasn't silly.
No.
It was humor that was like stressful. Like I was laughing, but stressed at the same time. And that's an incredible balance to strike.
Yes.
The special effects, amazing. You know, the practicality of all the costuming, the rebels being stranded on this island, on this planet. I just thought that they did an amazing job. And they even brought in seamlessly Krennic from Rogue One.
Yeah. There was no surprise that he showed up, really.
Yeah, we were told well before the season that he was going to show up, but I was glad to see him in episode one.
Yes. Weave him right in there from the beginning. It was so seamless that I kind of forgot that we had never seen him in season one.
Yeah. It was a really great opening to this season so far. And I can't wait to be able to, right when I finish editing this tonight, I'm turning on episode two because I got to know what happens now.
There you go.
So let's get into the episode breakdown. The test pilot. That's Cassian Andor. And on the planet Senar, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Cassian Andor infiltrates an Imperial shipyard as a test pilot. His accomplice, Naya, Wonders if it will be worth it if she dies, and Cassian reassures her. After some flirting, he clumsily steals a TIE fighter and barely makes it out of the hangar. He's chased by two Imperial ships, but escapes clean. Any overall thoughts on this scene, Marilyn?
Well, it's really interesting, because as I was thinking back on it, I thought, huh. We see Cassian giving this incredible encouragement to a young Imperial techie in support of Rebellion. Yes, it will be worth it. Yeah. Yes, this is a good thing to do. What a contrast, for those of you who have seen the movie, in Rogue One, when he meets Jyn Erso for the first time, and his whole approach to Rebellion and his ideas about this and so on. So I'm looking forward. I hope that this series is going to show us what changed him between now and the time when he met Jyn.
He's partway there now because, I mean, last season he would have just run away.
Oh,
he would not have been making a bond with anybody because he doesn't want to be seen.
No.
He wants to be invisible, right? But she says, I'm not supposed to look at you. And he goes, look at me.
Yeah. That was such
an interesting character moment, right? He's like, look at me. Look at me and let's be together. Let's be human together. I think he sees Rebellion as like part of human nature now.
And who is the person that told her she's not supposed to look at him, I wonder?
I'm sure it was a Luthen associate, since she seems to be in on the Luthen plans.
Yeah, that was my guess, but maybe it's because, you know, secrecy and protection and you can't, identify the picture or whatever.
It reminds me of the Wheel of Time with the Black Aja. They say a Black Aja member will know no more than three other Black Aja members, right?
Sure,
because if one gets caught, a very limited number of people can also get caught.
Well, that's a classic, you know, cell method for groups that are trying to take down, you know, the reigning authority, for better or for worse, depending upon the group we're talking about.
Yeah. And I love the way that Cassian turns these negative emotions into positive emotions. She goes, I'm nervous. And he goes, nervous is good. It keeps us awake.
Yes. And then, you know, you're finally, I wrote it down, but I don't have the thing with me now. You're finally basically in effect answering your own true call and let that be your courage.
Right. I have a line here that's basically that. I think it's the same line.
Oh, good.
You're coming home to yourself. You're becoming more than your fear. Let that protect you.
Yes, that's it exactly. Marvelous line. Marvelous.
Amazing.
Not something I would have expected from Cassian from season one. Again,
absolutely.
So the total turnaround. They, as you say, brilliant dialogue. They're able to convey it in just a couple of sentences.
There's a question in season one, I think, that is what radicalizes someone into action.
Right.
And I think one way out, you know, this whole prison break,
that was
the moment where Cassian's just like, I can do nothing. I can just walk on a beach.
Right.
And I'm going to be thrown in prison for the rest of my life.
Yes.
Obviously, this is not something I can avoid. I am now radicalized against the Empire.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you who have access to our Lorebury blogs, David wrote a fantastic blog.
Everybody has it, by the way. That's public.
They do. Okay. So be sure you read this, the 6 points about Cassian's radicalization. And it's all about season one. So you don't have to worry about being spoiled for season two. But
right.
Absolutely.
That's on our website, thelorehounds.com. You can look at all the blog edited by our librarian, Brian 8063. Thank you so much, Brian, for editing.
Thank you, David,
for writing that great article.
Yeah. It was really great. Yeah, during this whole scene, I was kind of relieved to know that Cassian has plot armor, because holy cow, he was clearly out of his depth, had no clue how this thing was supposed to work.
Yeah.
But of course, it is a new chess model after all, so who is supposed to know, right?
Right. And the Empire, I think that's the whole point of this, right? It's not just to like get an Imperial ship to sneak around in, it's that the Imperials have this new technology, and we need to know how it works.
Right. It's all about the tech now in our 21st century, isn't it?
That's right.
But I also love when we see him flying along at various moments, how it wobbles. Not just that it goes into this nosedive and barely comes out again, but he's flying along and all of a sudden, wobble, 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 and you think, oh, dear. Oh, okay, don't push that button again.
I think it's really interesting to compare it to Han Solo near the beginning of Empire Strikes Back.
I have it in my notes, as strong reminders of the asteroid chase from the Empire Strikes Back.
But yet, there is a difference here, which is that Han is a great pilot who is like, I can handle this dangerous run.
Right.
Cassian is a terrible pilot of this, at least. I think he can fly other ships.
Oh, yeah.
He's a terrible pilot of this. And he goes, I'm going to make danger on this run, right? It was not a particularly dangerous run, even though he's hitting every single wall that there is. But he shoots out the mountain path
so that they'll get
hit. And he might get hit, too. But he's like, worth the risk.
And after having shot out a whole panel of the side of the hangar.
Right.
So he can blast through it. I mean, yeah, it was very, very delightfully conceived.
I love the moment he lights up where he's like, I can break this. Like, he's like, I don't need to, like, figure out how to open this door. I can break this.
Right, right. I have enough firepower, and at least, like, I can figure out how that works. So, you got that one really early on in the process.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's we're talking about squadron style on this. There's a video game called Star Wars Squadrons where you can play as a ship fighter, right? As a starfighter. And pick different ships and whatnot. And I've always been so bad at it. Like, every time I've tried to play it, I'm crashing into everything. I'm always thinking, like, they're always so good at flying them in the show. And now I can just be like, I'm flying like Cassian Andor today.
There you go. There you go.
If I crash, it's Cassian's fault.
Cassian is my co-pilot.
Oh, boy. I did really like the chemistry between Naya and Cassian. I thought that was great.
Yes, they did a really good job with that.
This idea of like, oh, let's be flirty, but then, you know, it's pretend flirty so that they can pull one over on the commanding officer.
Right. And also perhaps to distract a little bit from the realization that they're both taking their lives in their hands. And Cassian is used to this by now, but I think this is the first time for Naya.
Right. I mean, he's only a little used to it, right? He's a year in. He's a year into like committing to the rebellion, it appears. And he's already like coaching the new people.
Well, even before that, you know, I think before he met Luthen, et cetera, was a life of risk. So that, you know, he had a lot longer time.
And he's really great at like, I don't want to say leading from behind because that's such like a phrase that's been like twisted, mm-hmm. but he's great at leading from behind. Like, look at the way he tells Kino Loy what to say in One Way Out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's great at like fueling the spokespeople.
How about empowering his colleagues?
That's right. That's right. He's gassing them up, as the kids say.
He's got the power with.
That's right.
As opposed to the power over.
So the Echo Squadron leader, Alicia, she wrote in with some Easter eggs here. One of them was that the password that Cassian was given to unlock the fighter, Kafreen, is the asteroid trading outpost where Cassian goes on a mission at the beginning of Rogue One.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. That's a little Easter egg for you.
So which squadron are we, John?
We're Django Squadron. Didn't you hear the intro, Marilyn?
Django. I was so overwhelmed by the cleverness of it that I didn't take on all the details at once. I'll have to listen to it again.
Well, I'm flattered now. Thank you. Yeah, so that's the Easter egg. I think let's move on to Mon Mothma.
Yes.
On Chandrila. Is it Chandrila or is it Chandrila? Because I heard it twice in two different ways in this episode.
Well, I think it's Chandrila, and I have reasons for that, which we will come to with my notes.
I see your reasons there. On Chandrila, Mon Mothma welcomes guests for her daughter Leda's wedding. Luthen is there to deliver a surprise from Skulden, but anxiously asks Clea about Cassian's mission. Tay tries to get a word in with Mon, but is interrupted by Leda's first fight with her betrothed.
The first, I suspect, of many.
I mean, it's interesting because she goes, he's a child, and I'm like, you're a child too. I'm looking at you. Like, why are we doing these weddings?
Well, you know, custom, tradition, whatever, and she's taking her refuge in that because she hasn't found any refuge in her family.
Yeah. Perrin, even the dad, you know, and
yeah.
Oh, I wish him luck. Like, why do men talk crap about the women in their lives? It's really.
But John, you would have more insight into that than I, although you wouldn't really because you don't do it. But
I don't do that because that's
talk
not
to
nice.
Other men who do. I don't know.
That's not nice. Don't do that, dads.
No. It's terrible. Even if you don't address them directly that way, it's still a terrible thing to do because your attitude will come out. And kids always know these things.
Right. What do you think Skulden's surprise is?
I think probably... Oh, Skulden surprise. I don't know. I was thinking about Tay's surprise.
I meant Skulden, who is... he's bringing Luthen in to deliver the surprise.
Yeah, I missed that. So yeah.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just speculating, you know?
Yeah.
We don't know, but Luthen, can I just say, I love Luthen in the dinner party. He's doing his like pleasant laugh and his
act. Yeah.
But also you hear when he finds out that the military is moving, that the Imperial military is moving, he's like, oh, where are you going to?
Yes.
It's subtle and it's friendly conversation, but he's gathering intel for the
military. Oh, he's absolutely gathering intel. That was one of my notes too. Yeah, he's clearly the glad hander and the interested, you know, slightly goofy looking dude who's nobody afraid of talking to and sharing things that probably if they'd only had one drink instead of three, they wouldn't be sharing.
Right. But he's so good at it, right? Look at his friendly smile, his little like head tilt where he's like, you can tell me anything.
Absolutely. Which of course is him being a good salesperson too.
I'm just a humble salesperson who serves all these rich people who want to buy ridiculous things in this time of fascism.
They're looking for ways to forget.
That's right. That's right. So you had notes on the name Chandra-La?
Yeah, the reason why I think it's Chandra-La is because it made me think of Shangri-La.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now that you've pointed that out, I see it.
Yeah, because that's exactly what they're aiming for.
Very nice.
Glorious costumes, magnificent colors. Some of the folks on the chat were already commenting on the incredible feast to the eye, just visually of Chandra-La. And I feel very badly for Leeta, because she's being let down by her parents. She's being let down by her culture. I mean, I'm absolutely with you, John, when it comes to no child marriage. However, it is the custom, and if she's looking for some kind of structure in her life, clearly she has turned to this. Despite both her mother and her aunt's trepidation of, oh my dear, this is not going to lead to good things. And the whole thing about he's a child, well, isn't it usual that women start to grow up faster than men? And actually, her name gave me another thought. Her name is very much like the name of a woman in Greek mythology named Leda, spelled differently.
Yes, I thought of that too.
Pursued by Zeus in the form of a swan. Yeah, I bet you did, because you've been reading up on Greek mythology lately, haven't you?
Leda was not a well-treated woman.
No, she was not. And I think this Leda is going to experience similar difficulties. I wonder how much of her story we'll actually get. Because her story is part of Mon's story, and as Mon starts moving away from her Chandra-La life and more into her other life, I have to think that there's going to be a split with her family.
I do hope that the family survives. I feel like it might not happen, though. I feel like
it would be lovely if it, yeah, it would be lovely if it did, but no, I'm not seeing it.
No. We did have a couple more lore drops from Alicia in this. On Styrgard, which is where where the Imperial soldier said he was coming from, she says, the son of one of the guests at Leeta Mothma's wedding is in the Imperial Navy and mentioned that he has recently been transferred from Styrgard, although the planet, which is home to a large Imperial Navy base, didn't appear in Andor's first season. It was mentioned a lot. The theft of Imperial materials from the base is what first tipped Dedra Miro off to Luthen's anti-Imperial network.
Well done, Comrade Alicia, or Commander Alicia.
That's right, Rebel Squadron Leader.
Rebel Squadron Leader Alicia.
We've all got too many titles here now. It's my fault. I made the kitschy little intros, and now it's my fault for giving everybody too many titles.
Oh, I think it's brilliant.
So she also says Erskine, Mon Mothma's assistant, was also in Rebels, so you may have seen him there.
Oh. I didn't. I know. I missed that.
Yeah.
Rebels is too long ago for me, I'm afraid.
I haven't watched it in a while either, but.
And I was just watching it for pleasure. I wasn't taking notes.
Yeah. I mean, Rebels, I still think, is one of the best pieces of Star Wars media ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, it has so many wonderful character stories.
Despite your extreme dislike of a certain character.
I don't have an extreme dislike. It's David.
You called him a tool all the time.
Who did I call a tool?
Though he has his redemption arc in the end.
Oh, in no, Rebels? That's David.
Oh, was it David? I apologize.
Yeah, no, I love Kanan.
I love Kanan too. All right.
Don't blame me. Don't pin that on me.
Okay. Happy to unpin it and pin it where it belongs.
Oh, that's funny. It's funny. So Tay's single now, we found out.
Yes. Isn't that interesting?
What's going to happen with that?
Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Do you know what happens a lot in divorces?
What's that?
They take a good close look at finances, divide things up fairly.
You don't say. Imagine that.
And I don't think Tay has nothing to hide.
No.
Affiliation with Mon Mothma.
Okay, well, that's the connection then.
I think that's why they're bringing it in.
Right. My first thought was, finances are going. Somebody's looking into his stuff, and he can't hide Mon Mothma's stuff anymore. But interesting that with the divorce connection.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's it. So, any other thoughts on this section? We have, I just feel for Lita. Why is she being put in this situation? Vel's there. Everybody's here, right? Like, Vel is there.
Yes, yes.
And Clea and Luthen. And
Luthen's assistant, who is...
Yeah, that's Clea.
Clea, right. Okay. Yeah. Clea I wonder if she ever has a good day.
She's trying to get in contact with Cassian, but she's like, look, I can't make a call from here.
Yes, seriously.
We are going to be compromised. It's interesting because Luthen is very careful, but Clea is more careful, and you can tell that.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of what helps keep Luthen afloat.
Yeah.
He has the wonderful intuitive courage to say, all right, I'm going to risk this here, whatever. But she's the one who makes sure that the foundation is so strong that if he does do a little blip every now and then, it's not going to, take the ship down. She said, mixing her metaphors wildly.
That's all right. We'll allow it here.
Yeah, so I think my bottom line for the whole Shandrala thing is things are very definitely uneasy in Paradise.
Absolutely.
Which is, I think, quite common in most of the Paradises that people predict. I mean, White Lotus and I don't, but, anytime you have something that is depicting very rich people who have everything they want, quote unquote, and are enjoying all the good things of life and so forth, I just kind of wait for the other shoe to drop to see what's seething in the underbelly and in the background. And
that sure is happening a lot in White Lotus. I'm excited to see where Mon Mothma's plotline goes. We don't know enough about it yet, but we are going somewhere quick with that. I think the rug is going to be pulled out from under her really quick.
Yes, and I think she's going to see it. The hand reaching out to jerk on the rug. It's right. Not like she's not aware of all this.
Right, right.
And she knows she's treading on thin ice, to add another metaphor.
Right. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we will head on to Krennic. Are you looking to get more out of the Rebellion but don't want a recurring subscription? Check out our Andor Season Pass, linked in the show notes, where you'll get bonus holocron episodes diving deep into the lore behind the series, Alicia's Rebel Squadron Radio briefing you on the timeline, and ad-free versions of our coverage of Seasons 1 and 2. All that for a one-time purchase of $10. Whether you're with us for the season or the long haul, welcome to the Rebellion, and may the Force be with you. We're back, and we're headed to the Malfeen Divide. Krennic calls a secret meeting with a chosen few to plan for a security alternative on Gorman. What a euphemism there. He emphasizes the importance of Gorman's underground calcite to the Empire, which cannot be extracted without destroying 9 cities and a total of 800,000 people. The Ministry of Enlightenment is eager to help, but Dedra tells Krennic he needs rebels he can count on to do the wrong thing.
Interesting concept. And oh my gosh, the title, The Ministry of Enlightenment.
Oh! Yeah. Oh, that's straight out of 1984, right?
Right. Oh, is it? Okay. All right.
Oh, well, I don't think it's exact. Sense. I don't think it's exact. Okay. No, it's the Ministry of Love is like the big thing that you don't want to cross in 1984. But these ministries that are like sound very nice, but are actually very sinister. That's big 1984 energy.
Well, and there's a lot of history that can say that, you know, the Enlightenment in Europe is so-called in many, many areas.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This is the first time that it struck me how much Krennic's cloak reminds me of Vader's, despite the color difference. I wonder if they're going to make him kind of a stand-in.
Yeah, that's interesting.
For that,
are we ever going to get Vader in the series? I hope not, honestly.
Right. Well, that's another question I have. I mean, we've not seen the Emperor at all. Right. And then the way they talk about him, he could be a mafia boss. You know, there's no sense of him being a Sith, you know, a Dark Lord of the Sith and being a Force wielder and all that kind of thing. Makes me wonder if they're even going to mention the Force at all in this series, which I think they're probably not. What do you think?
I don't think we have a lot of Force users in the series. Maybe one or two will pop up, but if so, it'll be sparse, and I hope it will be sparse. Because it's just not that kind of story, right? This is about, you know, these Force users get to go off and do these heroic deeds, and underneath them are all these people making moral compromises to make it happen.
Right, right.
To give them the space. Like, heroes need people underneath them to give them the moral space to be heroes. Right.
Interesting.
And that's why Luthen, you know, he burns his soul, right? He burns his soul to
definitely Luthen. I mean, I'm thinking now of Ged. I don't think anybody else is, you know, destroying themselves for Ged to be heroic. I think a lot depends on which show you're talking about.
Yeah.
In which universe. But it does seem to be a fairly common trope in this kind of.
And in the real world, right? Like, guerrilla movements are really messy. Really, really.
Oh, I have thoughts on that when we start talking about more rebels.
I have a lot of thoughts about those too. We get a lot about Gorman here, though, right? We get this whole like 1950s style ad.
Yeah, what was that all about? I mean, both
that felt not part of Star Wars.
In world and out world. I mean, it was weird. What did you say?
It just felt very not, you know, not the same tone as Star Wars, but. I'm fine with it. Like, I think it's interesting to see Imperial propaganda. Maybe the Enlightenment. I mean, look, the Ministry of Enlightenment people looked kind of like they worked in Mad Men's in the Mad Men office.
Yes. Oh, so I think that's intentional.
Yeah, that was the vibe we were trying to get. That was Don Draper right there.
And even the black and whiteness of it harkens back to the '50s.
Yeah.
But is that supposed to be a tape that the people themselves produced about their wonderful silk? Or is it something that was made by the Enlightenment dudes?
It's a good question.
Almost, you know, criticizing them and say, look how backward they are. They don't even have color TV yet.
That's a good question. We don't see a lot of, like, TV on in Star Wars. I mean, we did see the Star Wars holiday special where we had four-armed Julia Child. But other than that, we don't see a lot of TV in Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't need to be said, but I'm going to say it anyway, that mining a planet to the state of core collapse is unimaginably horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And, I'm reminded of certain mining practices in West Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. There are parts of the United States where places have become uninhabitable because of overmining. Yeah.
And I think that we're supposed to be thinking of that. I also found it interesting that Dedra survived Rick's Road.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder when they're going to show us her backstory, you know, bring us up to date with her. I mean, she just pops up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of questions that I have about, well, what's happened in her past 12 months? You know, what's been going on with her?
Right. Well, we know that she's thinking about spiders now. Gorlectopods. What a name.
Yeah. Well, again, not terribly imaginative of them. And the whole justifying the destruction of a region by slandering its population, again, I'm thinking of West Virginia and talking about, you know, Appalachians and their supposed ways and how supposedly backward they are. And I find myself wondering, how are the people on Chandrila going to respond when suddenly they can't get their fabulous silk fabrics anymore made from spider silk? Is there going to be
all any? Because of gouge mining? It even sounds terrible, right?
Well, it's going to destroy the core of the planet. How can they say that anybody's going to survive this? Why are they giving us figures of 800,000, which are horrific? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It will destroy at least 9 cities. Well, isn't it, you know, just going to destroy the whole planet if you have core collapse? How does
Let me ask you, they're talking a lot about energy independence. That's nonsense, right? That's not what they're doing here. They're making the Death Star.
Of course. Of course. And that's why there's such an emphasis on it, emphasis on the speed, chicanery, and Krennic is in there because that was his major secret project anyway. So what else would he be working on at this point?
Right. I heard energy independence, but we need the Kalkite to coat the reactor lenses.
Right.
Like, do you? That seems a lot like what you're doing with the Death Star. Uh-huh. So I don't know if there is like an energy independence aspect of the Imperial plan, but it certainly is not the primary objective.
Well, he had to come up with something else, didn't he? Because he couldn't possibly talk about Death Star at this point in the story.
Yeah.
Or in their story, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
A lot of its terror is its unexpectedness. So, you know, keeping it hush-hush until they know it's going to do exactly what they intended to do. And then they announce it to the world, as we see in the fourth Star Wars film, which most people now know as A New Hope, but I will always think of as Star Wars.
Yeah. And we have the Ministry of Enlightenment's whole spiel where they talk about how they blew up the story of an Imperial dying because of a shipping dispute.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't that sound familiar?
I mean, it's really interesting. You know, you have people putting up charges with no evidence, and they just
imagine
say,
that.
This is what happened.
Imagine
there's
that.
A company line.
Yep. All too familiar, alas.
And you know, I recently read 1984, like a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
And there's this whole idea of, like, it's not that we're changing the past. That was always the past. Because there's no record of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is always what it was. It's not that this once happened and then we decided something else happened. It's that from the beginning of time, this is what happened. We invented flight, right? Like, it's not, even though it started before us, we invented it, actually. The party invented it. And I think it's the same thing with the Empire, right? Is like anything good was done by the Empire, not by the Republic.
Oh, yeah. And as an historian and a librarian, you know, the realization of, yeah, it really is important to save your documents, to save your historical records, and and not just the historical documents. You know, it's all got to be saved because no one story, one version, one document can tell you the full picture.
Yeah.
You need multiple perspectives. Unless you're the Empire, and then you only want your perspective.
And look, state media is a thing around the world today, right? A lot
of
totalitarian regimes have state media and push a narrative that favors their government.
Yep. And only a few are going to benefit.
Right. So Dedra and Krennic, really, that one took me by surprise, this whole interaction where Krennic calls her out, right? He goes, "You're quiet, but you have a plan."
Yeah, yeah. And I'm trying to remember. I think Krennic actually says, "This is how I knew that I wanted you on my team." Some previous report or something, or that. I can't remember what it was.
It was that she clawed her way back, right?
She clawed
her way back. This her ability, I think, and this is all the backstory we'll get, and that's okay.
I know. I was just thinking that, yeah.
Her ability to work her way back into the system after a failure is what he wanted.
Which, to my mind, is too bad because I really wanted to see how the relationship between she and Cyril was going to unfold. Not
Cyril.
Really gory.
He's
detail,
busy eating cereal.
Well, I know from watching previews that he has not gone away altogether. So I will say no more for those who don't want to be spoiled.
Yeah, we'll see what happens here.
I really hope they do give us, you know, even a 2-minute flashback.
Yep.
Just to fill in some of those gaps.
Something else I wanted to mention is, you know, they say, like, oh, there could be a plague or natural disaster, but that would be too messy. And Then they say that the security measures are a backup, but they say, but we're going to start a new armory in Palmo tomorrow, which is the capital city of Gorman.
Yeah. Imagine my surprise. This is my shocked face.
Yeah. It's always the backup plan until it's the main plan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do all along.
Yeah.
And so expand upon Dedra's comment that what Krennic needs is rebels he can count on to do the wrong thing.
She says, you need a radical insurgency. Like, basically, like, you can say that there are rebels all you want, but nobody's going to believe you until they see something.
Right, right. Good.
It's and, you know, that's something that you see, again, totalitarian regimes over and over again do is, like, just try to catch someone, find a scapegoat, right? Find someone in a bad light.
Scapegoat is the word that comes to mind.
And make that represent everybody. So she goes, you need rebels who are going to make a mistake, basically. Go too far. Civilians die in something like that.
And suddenly you have the civilian population more or less on your side.
Right, right. Because once you label them terrorists, that's that you won.
Yep. Yep.
They'll welcome more restrictive measures and security forces on the planet.
And now I'm thinking Benjamin Franklin, those who give up liberty for the sake of security deserve neither.
Yeah, he hadn't read the Patriot Act yet.
Well, that came from 1776.
I know. That's why I'm
play
joking.
In the film, which I'm going to actually invoke a little bit later.
Okay. I'm excited to hear it. Should we talk about Mineral? Which is the name of the planet that Bix is on. I didn't know that until I looked it up.
But they I didn't write it down.
I think they said it last season that they were going there. Or maybe they said it this episode and I didn't catch it.
I mean, I've at least I have subtitles, so I do catch all these things. Yeah. Well, actually, they're giving them to us in, in little scene overlays. Changes.
Yeah. So Bix has nightmares of Dr. Gorst torture and awakens to the safety of Brasso, Will, and B2 Emo, as well as new companion Talia, who has taken a liking to Brasso. The group misses Cassian, but survives amongst the farmers. They grow worried as an Imperial auditor arrives.
I'd grow worried too if an Imperial auditor arrived.
It's actually, I should correct myself, it's an Imperial supply census. That's what they said.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. That great big lumbering vessel that was.
And they might be checking visas.
That's the really scary part.
Right. Right.
It's all about documents, isn't it, in the end?
It sure is.
Yeah, it was interesting that they pictured them in the middle of a wheat field.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot different from where they were, right? They were in an industrial zone.
Right.
And now they are in complete surrounded by nature.
And, you know, kind of echoes of Kansas, but also echoes of Ezra's planet from Rebels.
Yeah, that's
Lothal. Vast expanses of fields and
Lothal, you know. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. No Loth wolves here though.
No. Or Loth rabbits or Loth
whatever they were.
We had, all we the had, different Loth
cats we had.
Loth cats, that's what I was thinking.
Yep, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, fortunately from the very beginning of her sequence, I knew that she was dreaming. But I still found it kind of disturbing because, you know, stalkerly and all that kind of thing. And in no way surprising that she's having PTSD dreams.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they tortured her.
Is it Brasso who says, we'll have to tell Cassian? Somebody says, oh, we'll have to tell Cassian. She's still dreaming. And I'm like, did you really expect anything else?
Come on, people. What's she going to do? What's Cassian going to do about it?
And what part of PTSD don't you understand?
Well, maybe none of it. They're toolies. Probably. They're toolies. They don't have therapy insurance.
Fair point.
I like that they're able to use their skills from their hometown to like fit in this farming society, though, right? Everybody needs tools.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it doesn't matter that they, you know, don't know from agriculture, but they can certainly make whatever part you need as long as you can describe it accurately.
Yeah. There's not a lot going on here. We have Will maybe having a love interest, but other than that, not a lot going on here yet.
Yep.
We'll find out more tomorrow, they say.
I was going to say, I don't think this is going to last very long, so enjoy it while it's there, folks.
Right, right. All right, let's take another break. When we get back, we will wrap up the episode. Cassian flies the TIE fighter to the rendezvous point to pass it on to Porco. There, he is captured by a group of rebels serving under someone named Maya. The group is leaderless and bickering and can't decide what to do with Cassian or the ship after they decide Cassian is a rebel. By the end of the episode, shooting breaks out and Cassian barely dodges a blaster shot as we cut to credits.
It just occurred to me, the name Maya is also the same as the word for delusion.
It's also my wife's name. Maybe I should tell her that.
Well, only if you're disillusioned with her. But I'm just hoping that it's not indicative of her reliability or otherwise.
So Alicia had one more lore drop for us about this.
All right.
In season one of Andor, Saw listed off factions, and one of them was Maya Pei's Neo Republic. And this was a group of infighting rebels Cassian meets in the forest now. Neo Republic, because her goal was to establish a new republic, which of course we know is eventually successful after the Battle of Endor. Endor.
So I wonder if we are going to see more of her.
Do you know when I first heard about the show, I wasn't thinking about Cassian and I thought this was going to be an Ewok show?
No, for like a second,
because I hadn't seen the title. Somebody just told me about it. I was like, they're doing a show about the Ewoks?
Yeah,
no, they're not. Thankfully, this was about Cassian Andor.
Yes, yes, indeed. Yeah, for most of the Star Wars material, this question of how to get disparate rebel groups to cooperate post successful rebellion has always been a major question that I never really Star Wars answered to any great effect. I mean, you begin to see them coping with it in The Mandalorian to varying degrees of success. But it looks like they're going to give us some more of that now. And of course, they're just beginning to form. They haven't, you know, fought the major battles yet. It reminded me very much of the early days of the American Revolution.
Yeah.
When you really had 13 different groups that thought differently, believed differently, prospered differently depending upon what region they were in, and suddenly you're supposed to weld them all into one thing. There's a wonderful I don't remember if it's his diary or one of his letters, series of comments that George Washington wrote about, you know, they lack uniforms, they lack any sense of cohesion, they lack this, that, and the other thing, and I'm supposed to weld them into a single army.
Yeah.
And in the same way, he was supposed to weld these disparate peoples into a single nation, although at the beginning, I don't think any of them had that idea. And in fact, there were many of the colonists who said, we're British citizens. We don't want to lose that. And it took some finagling and a very shameful agreement to allow enslavement to continue in order to bring about agreement for even the Declaration of Independence. So I just wonder how much they're going to dip into that. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a central point in the series, is how do we get all these groups to stop infighting and start working toward the same goal? You see that in the Rebel show? The whole reason that Ezra has to go to Lothal himself is that Mon Mothma can't get everyone to agree to help him.
Right, right. No, you're right. So they have started picking up those threads a little bit here.
And even in Ahsoka, right? Oh, we can't go after Thrawn. No, I want to go after Thrawn, but you shouldn't go after Thrawn. And it's all these different factions, like even post-rebellion are not really together. It's almost a miracle that they were successful eventually in destroying the Empire.
Well, see, that's what I was just thinking. You know, it's one thing to be talking about, you know, a nation defined by landed boundaries. Hard enough to unify an entire planet, but now you're talking about an entire galaxy. It seems to me the only way you get united government that way is through tyranny, through the kind of rule that emperors are installing. I mean, yes, the High Republic operated for many years and with varying degrees of success. Yet, how much slipped between the cracks? How much?
Yeah,
was it really a sense of people are going along with the rules because at this time it's to their advantage, but as soon as it isn't, they're not going to?
Right. Because these planets were still governing themselves, right? It was just
right.
That there was right. a Senate that would stop like human rights abuses and things like that. It was sort of like a more powerful UN.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're ever, we're going to see more of that, how that worked as it begins to dissolve.
Yeah.
You never know what you've had until you lost it. I don't know.
I mean, you saw right after, you brought up the American Revolution, right after the Revolution, they go, well, we don't want kings. Let's make a new government. And they make the Articles of Confederation, which are have no power for anybody and nobody could do anything, basically.
Right.
You go to the absurd extreme and then you have to like bring it back. Like, all right, we right. need some level of authority to get things done.
Right.
And so I wonder how much we're going to see of that here. And my God, the French, boy, they had a hell of a revolution, but it didn't turn out okay afterward, right?
No, like, they kept going back and forth.
Right, exactly. And so who... You know, we know the future of Star Wars here, right? We know, presumably, the listeners have watched all the mainline Star Wars movies. We know where this is headed. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a beautiful story how the Empire falls, but it doesn't fully die ever, right?
No. I mean, that's, I think, pretty clear from The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
They explored that particular question.
Yeah.
Fairly effectively, but... You know, the foundation of the United States. You've got Whiskey Rebellions. You've got the presidency of Andrew Jackson. You know, this tug of power struggle between a united federal government and individual states' rights. And wow, isn't it still with us to this very day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I love the writing. It's a book called United Nations. And it emphasizes, Colin Woodard is the author's name, it emphasizes that from its beginnings, we were 13 different nations, not just colonies, by virtue of who settled them, what the regions were like, what kind of economic viability they could produce with, you know, the southern bayous versus, you know, northern New England. And that they carried those differences with them as people migrated west from the original 13 colonies. And that's why there is such a patchwork of culture in this country, you know, the E Pluribus Unum.
But I thought America didn't have culture. That's what the Europeans tell me. And I'm like, you ain't been around.
How many cultures do you want?
one of the trash TV shows I watch is 90 Day Fiancé. And
yes.
One of the parts that always amazes me every time is that so many people are going to move to Wisconsin after never being to the U.S. And they go, where's the city? Because like they don't realize that it's not all city, right? Like it's not just what you see in the movies, and we do the same thing to other countries, but
of course.
But you know, people do the same thing to the US. They just assume it's a monoculture.
Yeah. Well, and to be frank, that's what most science fiction creators do.
Yeah. But
it's a whole planet that's a monoculture.
I know. That is one of the things about Star Wars that gets a little tough is like every planet we go to one city and that's supposed to be just how that planet is.
Right, right. And I'm afraid that Isaac Asimov started that off and everybody has adopted it ever since. It makes for easier storytelling, but not necessarily
There are authors today starting to branch out from that, and I think that's good. But so let's talk about these rebels. I mean, what a piece of work, this crew.
Oh, God.
You've got Rika yelling, Need, Razy, Roud. Crab is the one who really gets things going. Crab is the one, so they can't agree who's in charge. And Cassian goes, who's really in charge here? Blast, 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 blast. Like, yeah.
Whoever shoots first is in charge.
Oh, my
the
God.
The Han Solo philosophy of...
It's so bad. Survival. And I love how they say, well, they like, who are you with? And he goes, who are you with? He goes, they go, Maya. They said, all right, now who are you with? He goes, you shouldn't have told me who you were with. I'm not telling you who I was with.
Yes, that was really, that was classic Cassian in a way. I think he didn't realize that that wasn't going to win him any brownie points with this crew.
It didn't win him any brownie points, but I think he cares more about the mission than he cares about winning them over.
Of course he does. And, you know, he's arrived to a place where he expected his own people to be, his own connections to be, and they're not.
Right.
He's dropped into the middle of the thing. Of course, the first question I want to ask is, where the hell is Maya?
Where's Maya? Where's the brother that left them stranded there?
And is she going to be betraying them? Also, I wonder, how in the world has she controlled this bunch of knuckleheads for so long? Because, wow, are they ever a seething stew of independent resentments?
It's just, look, if I didn't know the name of the show was Andor, I would thought Cassian died there because they were just so incompetent and blasting everywhere.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, that can work to your advantage if there is no strong leadership and nobody, quote unquote, in charge, then nobody's paying attention to you, and you can, as long as you don't flee in the direction that someone's about to blast, you can do pretty well. Somebody posted on our Discord channel the clip from the Monty Python, The Life of Brian. Oh, we're not this rebellion, we're that rebellion. The name is exactly the same words, it's just in a slightly different order.
Right.
That is at absolute.
Oh, you're talking about Life of Brian. Yeah.
Yeah, the flavor of this group.
We're not the Judean front. We're the front of Judea or something like that. Yeah,
something to that effect.
Very good. Very good.
I do hope that we meet Maya because she's got to be pretty phenomenal to keep this crew in line.
I just want to see all the different rebel leaders. Like, we got that tease of Krieger last season, and then Krieger died because Luthen goes, I'll give that guy up to keep you.
Yeah. And of course, we already know from watching other shows, Saw Gerrera's history.
Yeah.
And
from Rogue One, we know, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Cassian's going to have a great time with these guys, but I feel like he's going to put his foot down next episode. Again, I have not watched it, but I just feel like something's going to happen where Cassian's like, all right, listen, you all are terrible. Now listen to me. I'm a big boy. I'm from the big boy crew. And I do love the way he plays them against each other for a minute. He's like trying to talk to Crab, like, you know, they probably have you guarding me because they think you're dumb. And I could get off this planet together.
Yeah. Well, he's taking a leaf from the book of the guy that he shot during the heist trilogy from the first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, saying, yeah, sure, I'm going to betray everybody as soon as the money comes in. Which, you know, divide and conquer? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's that wonderful little line, united we stand, divided we fall.
And but, Cassian knows Maya, right? Like, he goes, we're supplying you.
Yeah, right. But unfortunately, Maya hasn't thought to tell any of her second in commands this information.
Because Maya's following protocol. Right?
To a point. I mean, what does protocol say about if your leader is killed?
And I just mean she's not telling them where they're getting their supplies, like where the other rebel cells are.
Sure.
I think that's the kind of protocol she's following.
In these early days, this is important. But again, you know, she could step on a poisonous snake and die. And we get the kind of chaos that we have now because nobody else knows any of those things. I mean, yes, safety, but at the same time, you're very vulnerable to having the leader taken out and then suddenly, you know, you scatter like beads where the string is snapped.
Yeah. They're not the most organized, I'll say.
Oh, I think that they were behind the barn door when organization was handed out, as the saying goes.
And Cassian in the ship cracked me up with, don't touch that. What does it do? I don't know. But neither do you, right? Like, why are we just touching everything in here?
Yeah, seriously. And the line, I don't think it works that way. the ship was definitely a wonderful source of humor for this episode.
They do a really good job here, too, of showing, like, the level of destruction a TIE fighter can do on the ground. Like, you usually only see them in space shooting at other ships, but, like, man, the blast that comes out of just the regular blasters with that is enough to kill, like, multiple people at once.
Well, we saw it was enough to melt through the wall of the hangar, so, you know.
Right. Well, I thought that
bodies don't stand much of a chance.
I thought that that was a bomb charge, basically, like a heavy blast.
Oh,
that he was doing, because charging up.
It's capable of doing it at any rate.
Yeah. So. But even the light fire is just massively destructive that you don't really get it unless you're on the ground with it. And I don't think we've ever seen one on the ground like this before.
I just wonder how intense the tests are for somebody to pass to prove that they can actually handle this new...
I know, right?
This new instrument panel and all the other things that he stumbles through one after another.
And Alicia did want me to mention that Sinar is mentioned in I think it's Rebels. It's at least within greater Star Wars media that Sinar is like the place where TIE fighters are made. This is known. Oh. This is like the main place that TIE fighters are made.
Okay. Isn't it kind of silly to put all your eggs in one basket?
Well, you have the whole TIE Defender plot line in Rebels. There's all these different initiatives happening. And I think that's the point, too, of Krennic is working on the Death Star. You've got Thrawn with his own projects. You've got this main TIE fighter factory. Like, there is no one attack that the Empire is trying.
Fair point. And one wonders how much the Emperor is actually involved at that level.
Yeah. I think the Emperor likes to sow seeds and see what pops up.
Yeah.
Seeds of evil, but it's productive seeds, nonetheless.
Is evil ever productive in the end?
It was for him for a time.
Well, in the end.
Yeah.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills.
That's right. And
it's always turning.
Anything else on these Rebels? I feel like we got a lot of setup this episode. I know this was a little shorter than I thought it would be, because I think that, that it's there's not actually a lot of plot in this episode. It's just nice to be back with everybody.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. And lots of questions have been established in this first episode, which I expect, you know, will be answered throughout the course of the season.
But right.
Yeah, I only watched the one time last night, and so I didn't really have a more detailed depth of taking things in, but there was definitely a lot to take in. It was definitely a lot of fun.
Definitely.
And again, as I start out by saying, so much more welcoming of an introductory episode than first episode to season. I guess in season one, they really wanted to let us know this is not your grandmother's Star Wars.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. They wanted to say, like, look, if he needs to, he'll kill. And that's not something that you've seen in the Rebels before. It's been like, we hesitate and the Imperials are the ones who are constantly shooting.
Right. And, you know, Han shot first. I have no trouble with Han shot first.
Me
I don't
either.
Know why.
That's who he was it's at just, the time.
That's who he was. That's who he was.
And he grows throughout the course of that trilogy.
Right. We get enough of his character to know that, you know, he's not totally, you know, stone cold and imperturbable in that sense. But
that's one of the best things about Solo is that they have him shoot first at one point, and I'm like, yes,
yeah,
we did it. We're back.
Yes.
did you hear they're putting that movie back in theaters, the theatrical version?
Oh, yay. I loved it so much. I just thought it was a terrific film, and I did not understand.
Oh, sorry. I mean the original movie, Star Wars, the theatrical version.
Oh.
The non-special edition, the non-George Lucas tamper.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, I've got the DVDs, so if I ever want to go back. Actually, I guess my DVDs did have all the editions. I remember the first time I watched them, what the heck is this?
Oh, boy. Well, Marilyn, you've got another podcast. You have Rings and Rituals, which is on and off season, but people should go listen to that if they want to hear you talk about Tolkien.
Yes, and it might be a good way to remind yourself of what happened in season one of Rings and Rituals. We'll be doing reflections on the rituals that are present in season two, so it could also be a good refreshment to catch you up for the coming of season three.
That's right.
But we do have time, and we're going to take our time so that we can do a nice, thorough analysis.
Very good. And if you want more Andor content, you may have heard an ad in the middle of this if you're on the ad feed. You can go to the show notes and sign up for the season pass. It's $10. You'll get a weekly Holocron bonus episode, at least one a week. I think we have a couple of bonus ones planned too. Plus, Alicia's doing like 5-minute briefings on what's going on in the galaxy at this time in the timeline. They're really fun. She's doing a really fun job with those.
I'm sure they are.
With just, you know, let's place ourselves in this historical moment. And so you'll get all that just for Andor. It's a one-time fee of $10, or you can sign up for a recurring subscription for starting at $5. You get all of our bonus content for all of our shows. We've got so much more going on. We're covering The Last of Us, covering Doctor Who, we're covering we're finishing up Wheel of Time. So plenty of stuff on the main Lorehounds feed. Daredevil 2 also finishing up, and then the rest of the I've almost said the universe, the Lorehounds extended universe, the rest of the network, the Barovian Broadcasting Network. We've got Nevermind the Music doing weekly coverage. They are doing the mix of music and psychology, diving deep into the intersection between those two fields. Two professors.
It's great, even though I know almost none of the music that they're covering. that the psychological insights that get drawn out are the part that really draws me in. So
I find both sides brilliant, and I can't wait to hear more episodes from them.
And occasionally they even pick a song that I do know. So yay.
Yeah. We also have Radioactive Ramblings. They just finished up doing, you know, Invincible. Now they're doing Studio Ghibli movies again. And I'm sure they have some more stuff coming up soon. So go check out their feed. We've got Properly Howard Movie Review on an off season, but you can check out their backlog and you can check out their new season when that comes out, I think pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. I will also be somewhat topical and say that if people are following the whole question of Conclave and who's going to be the next Pope, because as of this recording, the Pope is going to be buried in a couple of days. We did a one shot on the film Conclave.
Oh, yes.
So you might be interested in that, because a lot of news stories are coming out about, you know, how similar is the movie Conclave to what's actually going to happen and all that sort of thing.
Right.
Not to mention the huge impact that Francis had.
Yeah.
You know, there you can see a lot of his presence, if you will, in that film.
Well, he appointed 80% of the cardinals that are going to
be voting. Well, and he also is probably the most filmed about Pope in history. He's got 6 different films about him, either documentaries or fictional. So,
wow.
Very interesting.
Very cool. Very cool. And make sure you go and Alicia's going to have some more content on her Woolshift Dust and Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast feed soon. So subscribe to those so that you get updates once she's back. All right, Marilyn, I'm going to thank the people on the Discord server boosting it, which are Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doof71, Athena A., Tina Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard. These people help donate, you know, they donate their, David always says Nitro Bits. I have no idea where he got that from. But they donate their boosts to boost the server and make sure that we have, like, better quality images and whatnot. It's a lot of fun. So thank you all. And then our top tier subscribers, monthly subscribers, Lore Masters, they get a shout out every episode. And they are Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doof71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /Tim, and Adrian. Thank you all for your support, and may the Force be with you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, Commander, I'm released from duty for the time being.
We are going to head out, but don't forget, you're going to get 2 more episodes this week on the public feed, and then a bonus Holocron episode if you're on the season pass or the regular subscription. We'll see you on the next episode.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. And connect with us on Twitter @thelorehounds.
Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.